All right, this is the first podcast for the Candler blog, what I hope will be called a Candler cast. For those of you who haven't read the Candler blog, it is a film criticism and theory website, as well as other pop culture-y type things. And for our first podcast, we have here director Blaine Weaver, who's going to talk about a bunch of things. So Blaine Weaver's here.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here and ready to talk about a lot of things.
All right, good. Perfect. The first thing we should talk about is Weather Girl.
I think a perfect place to start. Weather Girl, indie feature. I wrote and directed it. It premiered at the Slamdance Film Festival, and now I'm getting a beep.
Okay.
The imperfections of podcast.
Yeah.
No, but it premiered at Slamdance in January. We did on the festival circuit, and then we did a 10-city theatrical release, and we just finished that, and now it's coming on television for its world television premiere on Lifetime TV on Wednesday, the 23rd, rather.
Right, the 23rd. Cool.
I'm really excited about it.
How long has that been in the works? Was the theatrical part of that to build up to the television release, or did that come along later?
Well, you know, everything is moving in such a different way nowadays. I think even the big shots, the television networks and the studios are, you know, improvising. And this is one of those deals, which I don't know if anything like this has ever happened before. Basically, we premiered Slamdance, and Lifetime was immediately interested. And they came to us and basically made an offer. And we were like, well, no, we, you know, as flattered as we are and as much as we like the kind of money the television can throw your way, you know, we had a lot of name actors in our film, including Mark Harmon and John Cryer and Blair Underwood and Jane Lynch and all these actors, you know, they worked for nothing, like $280 a day. And they did that because they were signing up for an indie film. You know, they could do a Lifetime movie and get paid $1 million to do it. You know what I mean? So we felt it was kind of a bait and switch to just flat out sell our movie to a TV network. And that being said, we also wanted to establish ourselves in the indie world, you know, before doing anything like that. So we passed on the offer, and then very soon later, they came back to us with an even more attractive offer and a 6-month theatrical window. So we were able to take that extra money that they threw on top. I funneled that through my company, Secret Identity Productions, and we did our own theatrical from it. Which, you know, I think was a big success. And, you know, the education that I got was invaluable, you know. And now my company is a distributor. And, you know, we have the experience to back that up. The movie's had its artistic cred legitimized. And now we're going to TV.
It's really
so
funny.
Yeah,
no, that's great. Because it's funny because you talk about how things have changed so much. And I'm here talking to a filmmaker, and you may as well sound like a studio executive with the rundown you just gave me in terms of, you know, we're selling the TV deal. Like, there's so many things, and you said it's running through your own company.
Yeah, it's amazing. What's amazing about it is how much power the filmmaker is having these days, you know? And, I mean, it's unfortunate, too, because, you know, I really believe that the days of the, you know, huge multi-million-dollar purchase price at the film festival might be gone. I'm not happy about that because I'd also like to get the big multi-million-dollar sale. But something like this, being able to craft your own deal, you know, that gets what you want, you know, and still being able to pay back the investors, it's exciting. And I think, unfortunately, it means that our budgets have to come down a little bit, you know, and keep in that margin of being able to make a profit so you can pay back your investors and so you can, you know, give your points to your actors and whatnot. But it's a bold new world, and it's exciting to be at the forefront of that.
That's very exciting. So about the movie itself, though, besides the business behind it, for those who haven't seen it, do you want to describe just a quick rundown of what happens in the movie?
Sure. Well, it's an indie romantic comedy. It's about this 35-year-old weather girl named Sylvia. And in the opening scene of the movie, she flips out on air because she's found out that her boyfriend, who is the anchor of the morning news show, played by Mark Harmon, has been cheating on her with the co-anchor, who's played by Caitlin Olsen of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So she throws this sits and has this great little speech where she just tells him to go straight to hell and walks off and then realizes she has no job, she's got no money, she's got no place to live. She moves in with her slacker younger brother and basically has to start all over again. And in the process, she meets this guy who's her younger brother's best friend. So he's a younger man and they start this little love affair. And, you know, it's just about a woman starting over and trying to actually grow up.
Cool. I'm curious, because you were talking about your street cred, you know, you have a lot of stars, self-described indie romantic comedy. Maybe this might show my ignorance of what's out there in general, but, you know, when I think independent film, I think, you know, there's drug addicts, or there's guns, or there's a lot of sort of stereotypical types of films out there. Maybe this is one of them, and I'm just curious if on the circuit, if where the indie romantic comedy directors fit in.
Well, it's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good question. It's like I feel like you're right. There is a certain, you know, my first film that I ever worked on as a writer was a movie that I wrote with another writer named Michael McCall named Manic that was about kids in a mental institution. And I mean, this is perfect, you know, example of what you're talking about. You know, that's what many film festivals want to embrace. But what they overlook, I think, you know, is filmmakers, you know, like Woody Allen or, you know, even Edward Burns, you know, or who I feel like fell off recently, but you know, the big movies that they made were these small, talky, you know, romantic or, you know, romance driven character pieces, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's really easy to slough those under the carpet, you know, but it's valid, you know? You look at James Brooks, who's made some of the best movies ever. I mean, are they considered romantic comedies? I guess, you know, there's romance in them. But, you know, that's really what I was after. And if you look at the marketplace today, it's easy to deny it. But 500 Days of Summer, Juno, Adam, I mean, these are the movies that are playing, you know, in the art house theaters, you know. And I think it's very easy for Fox Searchlight to do a movie like this, spend $7 million on it, get some really charming actors in the front, and then call it an indie movie. It's very difficult for a guy like me to come in and say, I'm doing a $500,000 romantic comedy and still fit into that niche, but it's only because they don't want to see it. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right.
There's definitely a market for it, and there's definitely a precedent for it, you know? And striving to be the next Woody Allen or something like that is, to me, the core of independent film and not something that should be easily dismissed.
Right. And with your, you know, $500,000 film versus the $7 million Juno, you had a unique situation, I believe, shooting this film, the way you were able to get so many actors, so many pretty big name actors. I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, to me it was, again, I'm so proud of Weather Girl being an independent film, and it's something that I often, you know, remind people because it's very commercial at the same time. But the way I got this great talent was they liked the script, you know? I mean, these great actors are actors who want to act, you know? And they literally put their paycheck, you know, aside because, well, Mark Harmon, for instance, plays a character completely opposite his role on NCIS, you know, which pays him a great deal of money. And I just think it's a very courageous thing for any actor to play against the type that makes him a living, you know? And you really don't see an actor stretch as much as I think Harmon does in this movie. I mean, he couldn't be a different guy, but that's why he wanted to do it. And I feel like all of the actors who, you know, have names and, you know, have worked a great deal wanted to do it because of that, you know? And like our star, Trisha O'Kelly, you know, she came onto the project. She had read the script. She's a friend of mine. She worked for me as an actress in my first film, Outside Sales. And I sent her the script just to see what she thought about it. And she loved it, and she wanted to produce it. And, you know, that was a big leap for her, you know? But she believed in the material, and it was a part she wanted to play. So it wasn't really the strangest thing in the world. To me, it's actors want to act, you know, and they want good material. And I do believe that there is a lack of good material out there, at least that has financing, you know?
Right.
So walking in and having a start date and saying, look, you're getting $280 a day, that's it, but we'd love for you to do it, and we're going to make the best movie we possibly can, you know?
Right.
I think it was a big, you know, they put a lot of faith in me, they put a lot of faith in Treasure, and they put a lot of faith in the script, and I think it's all paid off for them, and I'm really happy to be able to say that.
All right, cool. So From Outside Sales, this was your second film. From Outside Sales, yeah. Your first film, what kind of experience, I haven't seen Outside Sales. I've spoken to you about this before, though, but
well, you certainly should.
I will see it. But you're...
Check it out on Netflix. Anybody who likes Weather Girl, Netflix, Outside Sales, just saying. Sorry, go ahead.
So the experience moving from your first film to your second film, where you do have a lot more heavy hitters, I guess, that you have to coordinate or control or get performances out of. What was that experience like?
Well, it was an enormous difference. But that being said, it wasn't that much more difficult. Like, for instance, Outside Sales, it was a tiny budget. Like, my business partner, Brandon Barrera, and I, we sold a house that we had bought to flip to finance the movie. We made the whole movie for about $80,000, and it was very much like kids at camp, you know? It was all people that wanted to be there. Nobody made a dime, you know? And it was just for the love of making it, you know?
Right.
And then the huge education was, of course, you know, finding out how to make a profit on it, how to get it out in front of people. You know, that took longer than the entire production of the film did. But with Weather Girl, to me, like, you know, $500,000 is not much of a budget.
Right.
To us, it was a whole new world, you know? Mm-hmm. We had a sound stage and, you know, dressing rooms and sets being built specifically for us. We didn't have to steal anything. I mean, that was fantastic. I will say that one of the interesting differences, and you kind of touched on this in your question, is that, you know, you have these actors who are so established and so experienced, you know, and what changes to me is not necessarily the level of commitment or anything like that, but the worry that they, you know, they're really the only ones risking anything. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, you know, when Harmon comes in and is playing a lead role in a $500,000 movie, you know, he's really the one taking the big risk. So if he doesn't want to do it a certain way, you know, it's
right,
in his
right.
best interest not to let me film that other way, in, you know, at all. You know, if he just doesn't do it, I can't cut a bad performance together. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
In his opinion, you know, so I think the only difference is earning the trust, you know, mm-hmm. which I didn't have to do with the guys in Outside Sales because I knew them all and we were all doing it. And I was also acting in it. So we were like, we were in it together, you
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
whereas Weather Girl, it was like kind of I had to sell them on what I was making, you know,
right.
And every day we'd have these conversations that's like, you know, Weather Girl could be shot in such a way to make it a very bubblegum romantic comedy, you know, that wasn't what we were making. We wanted to make a James Brooks movie. We wanted to make a Woody Allen movie. We wanted to make something where people would go out to coffee and talk about it. We wanted the performances to be real. You know, we wanted the way everybody talks to be real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there was anything, there was a concern about that, you know, Mark had about me making his performance into a cartoon, which was never my intent. And luckily, you know, he gave me such a fantastic performance that I don't think anyone would ever consider that anything but, you know, a real guy, you know?
Right. He's a real
and
creep.
So, exactly. He's a real creep and, you know, and who's also got moments of kindness, you
right.
know? And that's what I love about him is when there's sometimes when he actually takes you in a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, it's a different animal than that. But luckily, you know, I got him all on my side pretty early on.
Cool. I guess my last business question, because we talk a lot about business of making movies, but I guess that's what it is.
Well, and I'm sorry if I'm going on about that, but literally the funny thing about it is that's been my life for the last year.
Right.
You know, it's like I can't wait to get back on set. You know, to get back to dealing with actors. But as far as Weather Girl, for a good year now, I've either been booking theaters. We traveled to all the theaters we opened at.
Wow.
So either I was there or Trisha O'Kelly was there or, you know, one of our, we went to Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is Ryan Devlin, one of our actors' hometowns,
uh-huh.
you know, and he went and did a Q&A. And, you know, we didn't really have the money to drop into, you know, a ton of ads anywhere. So we would just go and say, you know, you want to meet the writer director? You want to meet the movie star? Come on out.
Right,
you know, I think it made a real difference, but it's certainly you know, we haven't stopped living, breathing Weather Girl for the last year and a half, for sure.
Right, totally. So now that you're going, to Lifetime, so Lifetime's got you, which is great. I mean, so many people are going to see this. Do you have a guess as to how many people are actually going to see this movie? Like, what's the exposure on Lifetime?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't know. I know this. I know when we were first talking about, you know, the opportunity, you know, our agent pointed out that Lifetime is one of the few networks that is still has the money to pay for a movie, you know? It's like HBO and Lifetime, you know, that will actually drop the money for it, you know? And so that, to me, that says that they're pretty solid in the numbers.
And you're talking about acquiring movies, not producing them.
Yeah. Right. No, acquiring them. Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's really exciting because, like I said, I feel like we've done what we wanted to do with the movie. You know, like we went out and, you know, we had all the experiences that we wanted to have. You know, we did Park City and, you know, we hit the LA Film Festival and had all the, you know, the red carpets and whatnot. And right. Then we did our own little release. And now people are actually going to get to see it, which is great. You know, I mean, I feel like any theatrical release that we would have had, you know, say Sony or Paramount Vantage or somebody had come in and picked us up and, you know, done the big, you know, all the bells and whistles, right, theatrical right. release, I feel like we'd end up on, you know, probably Lifetime in a very short amount of time, just like this has happened.
Yeah.
And this will be where everybody gets to see it, you know, and I think that's really exciting. Because there's tons of people, you know, we run our own website, our own Facebook, all that jazz.
Yeah.
And there are always these people in, you know, Oregon who are like, when's it coming to Oregon? And we're like, well, I'm not going to Oregon. Sorry. You know? But now I can say, you know, you just tune into Lifetime Wednesday night. You can check it out.
And
so that's really good.
That's really interesting that the idea of the full theatrical really wasn't. I mean, I guess at some point that was probably your plan, but now I guess you're wiser for the experience.
Well, I think, I certainly am. I mean, it's such an education, and it's like there's so many things that you just don't know you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I feel like for indie filmmakers, I feel like it's right there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the difference between someone giving you a theatrical release and then charging you for the rest of your life for it, and you doing a theatrical release, you know, at you know, one hundredth of the price, you know, and then using that kind of exposure that you get to push a good DVD sale.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if that's the next step or if the next step is some form of self-distribution where we can get the middleman out of it. Because I tell you, I mean, that's the thing that kills me is, you know, the middleman always coming in, taking any chance of ever making a profit out of the equation, you know?
Right.
And I don't know, it's again, I've been, you know, inundated with, you know, theaters and booking agents and ads and papers and, you know, how many movie posters do they need? Do they need a flat or a scope trailer?
Right,
you know, that kind of thing. It does become all-encompassing, but the education is worthwhile, and I'm looking forward to trying it on my next film, you know?
That's a perfect segue. What's the next film?
Well, it's a movie called The 6 Month Rule, and it's again a relationship kind of thing. It's definitely darker and a little edgier than Weather Girl is, but it's about a single guy who's got these sets of rules on how to avoid relationships, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And The 6 Month Rule is that he's got this rule that there's nobody you can't get over in 6 months, and once you know that, you just accept it. You won't fall under the spell to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So he's very cynical. And basically, it's about him taking this journey that where he meets a girl who changes that for him. So that's the movie, and we'd like to be going in February. And yeah, it's exciting.
Cool. So that's underway. You were are you moving and shaking on that all the time? Are you casting? Or what phase are you at this point?
We're moving and shaking. We're talking about casting probably by November.
Okay.
We're still trying to pin down where we're shooting it, because another, you know, business side of this is all the tax incentives and everything that's coming up all over the country.
Right.
It's really exciting, you know, but at the same time, it's like very confusing.
Yeah.
And, you know, just trying to figure out what's best for this movie. You know, you want to serve the story first, but at the same time, you know, if you can lock in some security for your investors. That's a big deal too, you know, and it's, you know, we talk a lot, you know, at Secret Identity about like, this is, we want to do this for a really long time, you know?
Yeah.
So when you think that way and it's like, I'm responsible, you know, to not only the investors, but the actors that work with us, you know, it's like, I want them to get the experience that they are looking for, you know,
right.
It's like,
right.
Not the bait and switch where I drop it straight into a DVD bin, you know, and, you know, make some money for myself and say, oh, sorry, dude, you know. We make movies for theatrical release. That's what we want to do. We want to keep doing that. And, yeah, I think Weather Girl is a great step in that direction.
Great. Again, and I know you're living in the world of selling movies right now, but to move you into the world of making movies again, how do you balance all this, I'm just going to call it bullshit, of
fair enough.
Taxes and DVD sales and theatrical releases and festival and all this stuff that, you know, it's, everyone talks about this. People talk about it all the time. I'm just curious how you seem to balance your artistic self who wakes up and says, I'm going to make a movie today. And the side of you that has to deal with that heaping pile of bullshit.
Well, you know, I think of it kind of like, you know, having a kid, I guess. I mean, I don't have a kid, so this is kind of theoretical. But it's like, you know, it's like I'm not going to be good at all the stuff that the kid needs. Mm-hmm. But if the kid needs it, the kid needs it, you know? And that's kind of, you know, it's like when we did Outside Sales, we made this movie and it's fun and it was, you know, everything we wanted it to be. And we submitted to festivals and then it just kind of, we didn't really know how to do anything else. So it just kind of dropped off forever. And, you know, it took us a really long time to get back to it. But as far as balancing it, I mean, the truth is like I never become, you know, Bob businessman, you know, I'm always Weaver, you know, who's protecting the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And in protecting the movie, hopefully learning some stuff about, you know, the best way to protect it in, you know, taking it out into the world. Like, you know, you don't want the crappy DVD cover, you know, that they're going to make. And they're going to make a crappy DVD cover. That's just kind of what they do, mm-hmm. you know? So you got to fight that fight and, you know, have that big thing. And that's not me. I've never taken my artistic hat off when I look at the DVD cover and I know it's not the movie that we made,
right.
you know?
Right, right.
It's like, I just know it, you know?
Yeah.
The only business part of it is me calling them and telling them so, you know? And it's not always really comfortable, but, you know, I think it's another metaphor that, you know, we've tossed around a lot is this idea of, like, you think you're going to pass, you know, make a touchdown and be able to spike the football and walk away. But you can't. You got to carry the football home with you and keep it with you. You just keep carrying it through because there's no point in the independent world, and I would assume in the studio world to an extent, there's no point where someone's going to take over your best interests, you
right.
know? And if your best interest is the quality and integrity of your film, I don't think that ever stops, you know?
Right.
I mean, I'm done for right now. You know, we're going to have the DVD's going to come out in December, and that's really exciting. And eventually those rights will lapse, and they'll come back to me, and we'll start worrying about it again. But, you know, we hope that the movie will be around as long as the medium exists. So I think it's just a matter of taking the responsibility for the art, you know?
Right.
It's like, believe me, I don't want to do any more producing. You know, I'd rather just sit back and, you know, write and, you know, make movies. That's what I'm good at,
yeah.
you know? But, you know, if I have to learn a couple of, you know, lawyer speak words, you know, in the process just to protect that everyone suffered so much for and, you know, worked so hard for and sacrificed for,
right.
then that's my job.
All right. Well put.
I'm a passionate man.
All right. Well, that's great. I'm just curious, since The Candler is, you know, we do a lot of like film theory, kind of film news type of stuff. I'm curious if there's anything you're watching, anything you were excited about over the summer. I don't know if you have any time for that stuff with all you do. But if there's anything, any films or TV shows or I guess what's happening that might be of interest to Blaine Weaver.
Well, I wish I had something that was a little more, you know, I guess off the beaten path. But
bring it.
I saw Inglourious Basterds the other day, and you know, every time I see Tarantino at his height, to me, it makes me never want to write again. You know,
yeah.
I just think it's just like he's one of these guys who's so talented at taking left turns, you know,
yeah.
that I would never think to take, and doing it in such a way that doesn't leave you dissatisfied, you know? And I feel like so many writers that try to keep it interesting and mix it up and, you know, turn here and turn there, there's something dissatisfying in that because you kind of want to see the way it's going, you know?
Right.
It's like, oh, don't do that. Kind of like to see that happen, you know? But he always does it, and he does it in a satisfying way. Now, I'm not the first human being to notice that, but that's what I was thinking about.
Well,
that, and I just saw Mad Men last night again, and I love that freaking show.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, last night's was intense.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. It's a perfect example of, like, there's a show that doesn't have that kind of intensity, you know? It's like, I'm not going to ruin the show for anybody that didn't see it, but,
right,
you know,
right.
It's a little violent. You don't see that very often on that show, and
right.
they do it, and they do it so well.
Yeah.
I don't know. Any TV show that can make you yell at the screen, you know, is okay by me. Not in an angry way, you understand.
Yeah. It's funny that
oh, my God, I can't believe they did that.
It's funny that you mention Inglourious Basterds and Mad Men, I guess, because if you're worried about, you know, staying off the beaten path, I don't know if you read the Candler blog, but sadly, I don't really have time to get off the beaten path. Only because, you know, it's just me and sometimes friends will put stuff up. So, you know, for me, Inglourious
right.
Bastards was kind of a treat for the summer. You know, it wasn't a Transformers.
No.
But it's also, it's really just so funny. And I don't know if we could even go anywhere with this anymore, but I'll see if I pull the string. You know, you bring up Tarantino and you know, you are at Dead Center. I think it was Scaramucci or someone called you like the, when I think of independent film, I think of Blaine Weaver. And in 2009, you know, especially after hearing how passionately you just spoke about your work and what it takes to get that done, a Blaine Weaver is certainly, you know, like the independent filmmaker of the 21st century, I guess. And then we have someone like Tarantino, who was the independent filmmaker of the last decade or decade
right.
and a half ago or whatever. I don't know where I'm going with this, Blaine. I don't know if you got anything to go if 15 years down the line, where we might find Blaine Weaver. Is he making his Kill the Nazis movie?
Well, it's a good question. It's a good question. I mean, what's funny is, you know, you don't realize, you know, when you get to your head down and you're just working, you know, and people, and I think one of the things that's the same now as it was, you know, when Tarantino made his, you know, first great movie or whatever, you know, but or his first short for that matter, people are standing in your way telling you that you can't do it, telling you that it's a bad idea. And that, you know, it's like, it's such a blunder to cast this person and you do this and you'll never make a dime and you'll never get hired again. And
yeah.
you don't want people to think of you as indie because then you'll never get paid. You know, I mean, there's so many things that you're told all the time. You just keep your head down and you just work and you finish and you care about everything that you're doing. Right.
Yeah.
But you get to the end of that row that you've just hoed and you realize that all of a sudden you've developed a style, you know,
mm-hmm.
and a voice. And, you know, maybe it's stuff that, you know, like I mentioned the movie Manic, you know, which is very intense and dramatic and violent, you know, and I'm certainly, you know, right now, if someone was to ask, you know, say something about a Blaine Weaver film, it wouldn't be that, you know, Outside
right.
Sales is a very broad romantic comedy, you know,
yeah.
Weather Girl is a, you know, romantic comedy, you know, and, you know, my next film is a talky, you know, relationship piece. It's like, you know, it's kind of, you get, these are movies that I've written that I love, you know,
yeah.
I've written other movies that are not this, you know, tone and darker and more violent and, you know, more expensive,
yeah.
which is also a thing. To make a living, I'm a writer, you know, and I write all kinds of things. And I think it would surprise a lot of people, you know, the zombie movie that I wrote, you know, a couple of months ago or the, you know, the slasher movie, you know, it's like, I like movies. I hope to be doing anything, you know, that I want to,
right.
you know, in a couple of years. And maybe I'm doing it the same way. Maybe it's on a bigger scale. But I do really appreciate anyone who would consider me, you know, any kind of poster boy for the indie film world, because I think it's an exciting and dangerous and great place to be. So, thanks.
Yeah. I didn't say it. I just repeated it.
But... All right, now you're just taking it back, and now I feel lame. All right, forget it.
No. All right. I mean,
said it, they're genius.
Yeah. I don't even know what that word means anymore. I don't know if you do. I won't lie. It's one of those things where we just, you know, like you talked about earlier, you know, a half an hour ago at this point, you mentioned, you know, the Junos of the world, and we don't need to talk down to them because they're part of our ecosystem. You know, the studio art house film is part of what allows people like you to have an in on your own dime. But at the same time, you know, when you're out there pounding the pavement and you know, Joe Schmo says, I want to go see an independent film, I want to see something with, you know, seven or eight name actors with large speaking parts, it's difficult to pinpoint what that word means.
It is, and you know, I think you really hit it right on the head there. It does allow me to function, because you know, one of the things that was so interesting to me about this, you know, theatrical release we just did, is that, you know, we could play at any theater right next to the Hurt Locker and Moon and 500 Days of Summer, and you know, and it's like, you know, oh, it's the exact same level of movie. It's not, you know, financially, certainly. You know, it's like these movies cost a whole hell of a lot more than my movie did. It was a much less risk for everybody involved, you know, than, you know, in my film. And it's fine. I don't think it's a pissing contest about who's hurting more or who's, you know, braver. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't really shake that tree too often. I just kind of let it, you know. The only time I do get a little sensitive about it is when, you know, people talk about all the risk that's involved, you know, in doing a movie like Juno, you know, and like people are getting huge credit for, you know, like, no, it's like, look, I did, you know, it's a fine movie. It's much better than Transformers, you know, it's like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I have nothing against that movie, you know, it doesn't stand for anything that I want to destroy, but let's just get our heads on straight, you know, it's like, it's not the same thing.
Right.
When a studio finances a movie, even if it's under a shingle that has the name independent on it, you know, it doesn't suddenly make it not a studio movie. And that's, again, fine, because all these indie theaters are around because of that, you know?
Yeah.
They're around because the studios are making things they're calling art house independent films, and people are liking them, you know?
Yeah.
So I can go, you know, to a tiny theater, talk to the owner, rent the theater, just show my trailer in front of Hurt Locker, you know, and I'm standing there right next to him. And I love that.
Yeah.
But give me a break. You know, it's just a different world. The guys that are out there that are sweating, you know, that's it's just different. It's not better. It's just different.
Right, totally.
You know? And I don't think you can claim it.
Right, totally. Yeah, in credit where credit's due, there's bad studio films, there's bad independent films, and I think per capita they're pretty close to how many of each there are. I'm not positive about that. There's a lot of independent films, but
I think it all depends on how you're counting them. You know, like how many that get made or how many actually see the light of day.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you have a few more minutes to chat about a few more little weird things?
Sure.
All right. Yeah.
I'm fine. It's your interview, pal. You tell me.
All right, cool. So another thing that I've been kind of a post that's been in the making for a while is on digital projection and digital distribution. And your film, you acquire digitally. I don't believe was Outside Sales on film?
Outside Sales is on, it's on iTunes.
I mean, on when you shot it, did you shoot it on film?
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, we shot it on DV back in the day.
Back in the day.
So we shot on DV and a little bitty XL2. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we couldn't have done it otherwise. You know, one of the things that's been kind of a metaphor for, you know, us, or like a lesson at least, was the first meeting we had was with our line producer, who was pitching us on the new camera, the Red, that everybody was talking about.
Right, you know?
It wasn't even the Red, but it was something big and fancy in HD, and we were, you know, oh, we had a great deal on it, but the deal was something about like $20,000 more than we could possibly afford.
Yeah.
And I was just like, look, I don't care how good it is or how good the deal is, we can't afford it, you know? So we're going to do this, we're going to do it with the best we possibly can. And then, of course, you get through it, and you're like, oh, man, if only we could have had that thing, you know?
Yeah.
Because I feel like as long as, when you make a good movie, you'll always wish that you could go back and, oh, if only we could do that. But, you know, indie film, you just can't. You do the absolute best you can with what you can afford, you know?
Right, right.
Because when the day you start going more than you can afford is the day, you know, you might as well, you know, stop it before you spend the money, you know? Because you won't make it to the end.
Right. Besides the acquisition, I don't know if you know, in your adventures in selling your film, if you've come across having to deal with digitally distributing your film in theaters, like a projected digital image.
Oh, I certainly have. Yes, that has been a bear. I tell you what. Here's the thing. Here's what I thought,
yeah.
Right? Because I'd done film festivals. I did film festivals with Outside Sales, and I did, you know, about 6 film festivals with Weather Girl. And at film festivals, you know, you go and they tell you what they have, you know, and most of them have HD cam, you know?
Right.
They're like, oh, great, you know? So we'll do HD cam. And I had this image that these indie theaters, these high-tech indie theaters, not the old school, of course, you know, but most of the ones that were going had standard, you know, things like either they had HD cam or HD cam SR, blah blah blah. But that's untrue. There is no standard. There's no standard projection for digital right now. None.
Right.
And it's like people keep talking about the what's the 24p hard drive. You know about this thing?
Yeah.
It's
there's a million of them. I don't know which one you're talking.
This is the one that like AMC is kind of standing by, and
right.
They're like, oh, this is the way it's going, and it's, you know, it's a hard drive, but it's got, you know, a $30,000 project on it,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you know, it's one of the lessons that I picked up from this movie is I would definitely splurge on the 35mm print.
Yeah, really.
I just feel like. I feel like it opened so many doors, and we spent so much money just renting decks for places, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, rent. We played at an AMC in Chicago, and it was a really cool theater, and they were really excited about us being there, and we're like, well, we're projecting digitally, and they're like, okay, great, we'll set up a projection unit. And, you know, because it's a big chain like this, they have very specific guidelines. We ended up spending several thousand dollars on that, like $6,000 for the week, you know? And then, you know, then of course, when it's a legit booking and not a four wall, you're splitting the doors. So it's like, no matter how good you do, you're not making that money back, you know?
Right.
Whereas if we had done a 35mm print and maybe 2 copies, you know, let's say you spend $50,000-$60,000 on that, you know, that's a lot of money. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But then you never have to think about it again. You can send it to any theater in the country, you know, and they can play it. And if you have, you know, 1 indie theater that you want to, you know, you want to do, you drop an HD cam over there, you know?
Right.
And it's which you probably made for film festivals anyways.
Yeah.
But the most frustrating thing is the lack of coordination, because you think you figure it out. I'm not kidding you. Every single city I went to, it became addictive because I would want to check out the movie first because invariably something was wrong,
right.
You know? It was the wrong aspect ratio, or, you know, the color was down, or it's like, you know, because every single one of those projectors is different. And, you know, especially if you're going from Digibeta or HD cam or, you know, a hard drive, it's very confusing, and the quality, I think, is, imperfect.
It's really funny because I hear about this from both sides. You know, there's a theater here in New York, Symphony Space, who recently did classic films in HD, and they have an HD projection system, and this is a program from a company called Emerging Pictures, whose goal really is to make this easier for guys like you. And I just know this because I've talked to these people, and I was supposed to write something. Sorry, I still haven't. Speaking to a programmer, They see many programmers at independent art house cinemas see digital as like a godsend of, you know, the film can be delivered to you through the internet to a hard drive. Prints get ruined. People destroy them. They get destroyed every time you use them. They're expensive to make. They're expensive to store. On and on and on and on and on. And yet, it's the Wild West out there. So it's a little bit unfortunate. I was hoping that maybe in your time around the country, you might have had a better experience.
No, I mean, and that's the thing. It's like I love that idea too. I mean, that's what I thought it was going to be like. You know, there was not one venue that I even spoke to, and I spoke to well over 30 or 40. You know, art house theaters, yeah. You know, across the country,
yeah.
You know, we actually booked 10 of them, you know, but no one did I even talk to, you know, one place, allowed me to show from a hard drive, which was the simplest thing in the world, you know. Now I've been told by many of my tech friends that pretty much probably all of those other places could have, if they had known what to plug in where,
right.
Play from a hard drive, but they didn't know how, you
right,
know,
right, right.
And they didn't offer it as an option, you know? There are so many options, but it's like the truth is most of them are playing from Blu-ray or DVD, you know,
yeah.
And anything more than that, they don't have a deck for it or, you know, like, you know, what's wrong with Blu-ray? Well, Blu-ray skips,
yeah,
you know,
it's atrocious.
It's atrocious. And it's like, you know, it's like, that's fine for watching it at home, but it's like, you know, people are paying for tickets.
Yeah.
And the one thing I never want to do, and I think it's one of the reasons that, you know, I've done okay, you know, is that we don't let our stuff get any kind of free passes because we're indie, you know?
Right.
It's like, I don't want anybody to say, oh, it dies in the middle of the scene, you know, well, you know, it's a little movie.
Yeah.
No, you know, that's
yeah,
not
yeah.
okay. That's not, we've put so much work into it, you know, it needs to be perfect. And honestly, there was no one spoke the same language. And like I said, the problem is that the guys that you're talking about, I would imagine, probably, do they have their own chain of theaters, or are they in line with, you know, the smaller guys? Is what's their focus?
They're hooked up with different theaters. I don't want to say the wrong thing. But
oh, totally.
Yeah, who cares? I could say the wrong thing, I guess, and just correct it later. But they were originally sort of a distribution company that is now moving more into the a theatrical releasing company. They don't acquire work anymore. They get it to theaters, and they don't own the theaters. They have basically an alliance of independent theaters around the country who work with them and do the screenings. I don't know how their business works at all, but
it would have to have a pretty long reach to me, because, like, you know, when AMC and, you know, like the AMC thing that they're doing, and I keep throwing the name around, I should probably be careful too. I don't know. A big company. You know,
yeah.
But it's in line with Dolby and THX and all that stuff.
Right.
You
well,
know?
I can tell you about that, because, you know, I do this for a living besides my the fun stuff of getting to talk to people like you. But, you know, AMC and the movie studios, I really should say, have set up a system that is very comprehensive if you are a movie studio, which means you are a multinational corporation.
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. You know, they have a lot of bank behind this stuff, and they're investing truckloads of cash into getting these kinds of systems into those kinds of theaters. This is nothing new. You know, in 100 plus years of cinema, the biggest blockbusters have always had the best technology. There's nothing wrong with that. What independent companies like Emerging Pictures are trying to do is basically, and they're the only one I've spoken to, I don't need to be their cheerleader, but they are trying to make those kinds of file systems and the way that you deliver that much simpler to the independent filmmaker, much much more comprehensive to someone who can actually speak English or speak actual video terms. Now, the trade-off, as you mentioned, is something like THX and those kinds of theaters you know, this isn't going to get you into the AMC. This is only going to get you into the art house that's on that system, which is, you know, again, going to give us this, like, two-pronged, you know, you're either in or you're out. You have to make a decision at some point how you're going to distribute your film.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Yeah, and I think that makes them, that's what we very clumsily was trying to get at, was like, I don't know how the reach would have to be pretty extensive. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because once, let's say that goes, you know, let's say that in 10 years or 5 years even, you know, every single chain across the nation has the big dog THX Dolby setup, you know, that is all digital and, you know, costs a great deal of money.
Right.
And the small art house guys have gone a different way, then they can't show the big 500 Days of Summer and Dolby in that way.
Right.
And so they, all of a sudden, their technology is moot, right?
Right.
And I think that's what I ran into a lot was, you know, not mom and pop, but, you know, the two guys that hang out at the coffee shop own the independent film theater, you know?
Right.
And they're like, you know, they're keeping up with it, and, you know, they're trying to... But they're still trying to stay in business, you know? They're, you know, perhaps the Angelica will hit something like that, you know, or one of these chains that are so cool, you know?
Yeah.
But I think most of the indie theaters across the country are, you know, a couple of guys with some investors, you know?
Right.
And are they going to take the money, you know, to get in line with everybody when it might not be the way it's going? And I think that it was a fear that I ran into everywhere.
Right.
Of like, well, we're just showing Blu-ray. I played one place from Sony PlayStation. that was surprising to me.
I love it.
Yeah.
Did you guys?
And I'm like, that right there made me believe in film.
There was Grand Theft Auto in the middle of Weather
World. Exactly. I'm like, this does not fill me with confidence at all. Oh, no, man. Have you ever watched anything on this? They're great. Oh, okay. Thanks. Great.
I would love to. I would tell, if I was a kid, I don't even have to be a kid. If I walked into the projection room and I saw that, I would totally pop in some, I don't know. They don't have Halo. What else do they have? I'd just see what would happen.
Just make sure I'm not watching that deck.
Weaver's getting really intense. This Weather Girl movie just took a turn for the worse.
Oh man, it ain't good. You don't like freezing up when you see the little digitization thing happen, or it's not good.
Yeah,
my stress level is still coming down from that.
I think something's gonna happen. Yeah, I mean the other truth about this is that you know, the big theater chains, they're the people who make money on movies. You know, it's.
Yeah.
You know, there's all kinds of intricacies of this business that the viewers don't know about. But the truth is that the actual theater is the cash cow of the business, not making movies. Theaters are always going to make money, so they don't need new systems. They need people to get in the seats. So if film works, it works. And I guess the fear on all sides and. Apparently, it's worse in the independent film world than I had expected. is really that film is still the king for your distribution, really, for theatricals, I guess, because it's so ubiquitous everywhere.
I mean, it certainly is for me, and you know, I'm sure you know the world is changing really quick. So I'm sure that you know we could have this conversation in 6 months, and maybe it would be different. But the biggest thing for me, just to reiterate, is just like if you can't guarantee the quality of your product, you know, then you know the technology is not working to me, you know.
Right.
And that was something that I kept running into, was just like, you know, some glitch because it's not the same, you know, different deck, different. I mean, we played here in Los Angeles. This was a nightmare. We played here in Los Angeles, and I won't mention the place, you know. But the first day, you know, there was a digital hit in the movie, and it went black for like a second, you know. And of course, I flipped out, and this was the first showing of the first day.
Yeah.
So I went back to my post house, and I freaked out, and I demanded another HD cam immediately, and they provided one. They said, we QC'd this. There was no hit. I'm like, well, there's one now. Blah, 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 blah. We got a new tape. I delivered it. That tape had a hit in another place. So then we had a huge discussion. This went on for 24 hours, you know, of me freaking out at every single human being until I took the first tape back to the post house and watched the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
And discovered there was no digital hit, that it was something with the projector. And, I mean, that killed me. And apparently, one night when I wasn't there, and I was there the entire weekend, except for this one show, right? Yeah. But apparently, it started with the sound off, right?
Uh-huh.
And the, this is Los Angeles, man, you know? and you know, of course, I've got friends in there, and some investors in there, too. It was like a Saturday night show. And, you know, they called, come back and tell the people to stop showing the movie. So they stop showing, they stop it, turn the sound on, and then press play, right? You know, it's been going on for 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So then they kind of demand that they turn it over again, you know, start it over again. And the dude, the manager, blames me. Like, literally says that our tapes have been no good all weekend.
Ugh.
Now, come on. Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of nonsense. That, and I mean, when I start messing with the 35 millimeter prints, I may find that it's just as frustrating on that side, but I just can't imagine it being so.
Yeah.
This, you know, it just, that's a nightmare,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, there's nothing you can really do about it, you know, especially if you're a guy like me who's learning, you know, the technology of projection as he goes,
yeah.
You know?
I can tell you from experience. I've seen that at an AMC, actually. We keep on talking about them, but I've had so much trouble with AMCs in New York. I saw that happen on a film print. I can tell you, Rocky Balboa, the film was loaded inside out. I don't know how in God's name they did it, but the picture was backwards and the soundtrack was visible on the side of the screen.
And that's not easy to do.
It's not. The trailers actually ran the whole way through like that, and then it was that kind of, what do we do about it? You know, is someone gonna call someone? Someone's gotta go do something. And finally they flipped it around, but in the middle, like, it just went to complete black, and then all of a sudden we're in the middle of the movie, and I had no idea what was going on. But, you know, they don't.
They don't care.
They gotta get the next screening seated.
Yeah, here, let me start it over for you guys.
Yeah.
No way. Yeah, it's a thing. And, you know, it's like, I mean, you know, there's tons of bitching to be had, but just throw this out there. I'm a big fan of any independent theater that shows independent films, despite the fact that it may be frustrating at times.
Yeah.
That's all. That's my disclaimer.
No, yeah, absolutely, man. Because we all fuck up. That's the
yeah,
bottom line.
Totally.
All right. So, this has been a good talk. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's been a great conversation.
Yeah.
I didn't know if we were just gonna do a little bit or just. I hope I didn't talk your ear off, but I got lots to say on the subject.
No, man. This is great. I have no idea. I don't know what I'm gonna do with all this stuff.
Well, good luck with it. And it was great just chatting with you, man.
It was good to chat with you too. Let's. Do you want to just put one more plug for Lifetime?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Weather Girl plays 9 o'clock on the big cities and 8 o'clock in the middle on Wednesday the 22nd. Check it out.
All right. I think it's the 23rd still, but that's okay.
Wait, let me do that again.
Go for it.
All right, the 23rd. Fine. Weather Girl plays the 23rd, which is Wednesday. I'm terrible at this. You do it. You'll do it great.
That's fine. I'll Weather Girl premieres on Lifetime Channel. What's it? 9 o'clock on the East Coast.
9 in Pacific and East Coast, and 8 in the middle.
9 Pacific, East 8, or wait, 9.
I know. Look, we're terrible.
9 o'clock.
It's 9 o'clock on the coast.
On the coast.
And 8 o'clock in the middle.
Everywhere else, it's 8 o'clock.
Yes.
on the Lifetime Network. I don't know. What do they say? Check your local listings. What is this?
Check your local listing.
What the hell is this?
It's gonna be great. You're gonna love it.
Awesome. All right, Blaine Weaver. Thank you very much. This is great.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.